Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. Lee, how you holding up, buddy? It's been a full day for you.
I am fired up about this segment.
Hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. I've known this was coming together for some time because, you know, I do all the very heavy lifting on the admin side of what we do.
So yes.
I've been anticipating this for some time. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Patrick Wren. He is with the Wren Wealth Management Group, and he's also an author of a book called Finding Your Money's Greater Purpose. But first up, on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with L&L Agency, Mr. Russell Clark. How are you, man?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you guys for having me.
Now, Russell, can you share a little bit about L&L? What are you doing for folks?
The L&L Agency is an experiential marketing agency. So I guess that's a fancy way of saying we bring brands and fans together. If you've ever been to a Falcons game or a Hawks game, and you walk outside and Coca-Cola is outside giving you a free Coke, or you've been inside and you might see the models with Jack Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, that's not the brand or the company. It's an agency, a third-party agency like ours that kind of fills the gap.
Now, when you're working with a customer like that in that kind of a way, how do you measure success?
There's a couple of ways. I mean, there's quantitative and qualitative. So if you want to measure the number of samples that have been given away or the number of participants that come by and impressions, that's very easy to calculate, you mm-hmm. know, be it through social media, through giveaways and premium items. But there's also a lot of qualitative study in terms of, you know, getting some questionnaires and surveying, you know, what are your thoughts on the brand and what the experience, you know, was tonight's game exciting? Was the brand involved? Who do you remember being a part of the game and being a sponsor? So there's different ways to kind of measure.
Now, are companies, because it seems like there's a lot of focus of online activity, how important is this kind of offline in real life kind of interaction with their fans?
It's extremely important. And what it is now is that it's how do you merge the two, the online and the offline? So mm-hmm. you create that memorable experience. They're going to the game, and they're going to the concert, and they're having a great time. And what do? They pull up their camera, and they take a selfie.
Sure.
And then they take that selfie and post it online. So that's mm-hmm. that's the online meeting the offline experience. And so what you have to do is really create that moment that they want to capture and say, I had a great time. And, you know, part of this was, you know, made possible by this particular brand.
And is that the way you work with your clients? You kind of figure out, okay, we're going to be at this event, like you said, the Super Bowl or maybe the SEC Championship or a concert or something like that. And you go, where are there opportunities where we can create these kind of photo ops or these fan interactions? And how can we encourage the engagement and sharing of this?
Absolutely. What you want to do is really be strategic in that. So, you know, they may have a targeted demographic. They may be looking for males, you know, 18 to 24. Where are they? Okay, they may be sports fans, and they may be a particular kind of sports fan, college mm-hmm. football. So let's target the college football. Let's, you know, be at a Home Depot, Coke Zero, go out there and target that fan specifically, or an alumni, maybe a little bit older demographic.
Right.
So you find the event, then kind of matches up. And then, you again, going back to creating that experience for that fan.
And then, but how do you come up with the idea of what is that going to be when you're actually at the event?
Well,
that's the fun part, right?
That's the fun part. And actually, that's the strategic part. So that's typically, you know, months out in advance. So we'll look at that very hard, find out how they do communicate and engage, how we can do that on site. It's a little more fun with brands like Jack Daniels.
Sure.
So, you know, there are some events we can do and some things we can do there with that brand mm-hmm. That you may not be able to do with the Coca-Cola, which is more a little bit more family friendly, obviously. But we do look at a strategic model. How do we engage them? Again, going back to sampling, what do we want them to take away from this experience? And then we try to match that against the event.
So when you're doing an event for these large brands, how do you even get them? How do they even know you exist? How do you get on their radar? Because I would imagine it's a pretty competitive field.
It is an extremely competitive field, and that's a great question.
You're doing these experiential things, like, so you're going to hanging out with them and you're
right,
sampling and your wares?
We're sampling our wares. We're one of many amongst them, maybe a trade show. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of, you know, cold calling, you get out and, you know, you kind of beat the bushes a little bit and see who else is out there and see if there's opportunity. Within companies like Coca-Cola, there's a lot of various, you know, departments and brands. So while you may work in Coca-Cola, there's still the Sprite brand team and the Coke Zero brand team.
Right, they got hundreds of brands.
They've got hundreds of brands. So, you know, you kind of work your way. But it is very competitive.
But I'm sure doing good work is a good sales tool, right?
Doing great work is a great sales tool. And they will talk and, you know, pass you along from department to department. And doing bad work, obviously,
works
the same way in reverse.
Now, have you always been in this, in marketing?
In some form of capacity, yes. For the past going on 20 years, you know, I've been in Atlanta and between Atlanta and Florida, actually, and I've worked for the Atlanta Hawks, the Falcons, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, the FedEx Orange Bowl down in Miami. And so I've done event management, event marketing.
From both
sides of the table. So I've been on the property side and trying to attract brands to the game and be a sponsor. And I've been on the consulting side and the agency side, working with the brands and the property. So
now you're wearing the agency hat.
I'm wearing the agency hat.
So now how do you kind of build the relationship with the properties? Is that part of your job as well?
It is. I mean, because once you want to represent the brand, and you know, I'm always an advocate for my client, but the way you get the best return is having that great relationship with the property.
Mm-hmm.
Because you may go in with, you know, X, Y, and Z on the contract, but there may be something that we haven't talked about that we can leverage. And it may be, you know, hey, can we get a post-game meet and greet with the talent that wasn't talked about before? But you know what? Sure, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, maybe we can bring our mascot in to do something with your mascot, you know, at the coin toss. We hadn't thought about that. Great idea. So when you have a great relationship with the property, it also extends out to the brand and maybe you can find new synergies that weren't there at the initial contract.
Right. It wasn't probably on the initial proposal.
Correct.
And as long as you're both trying to work for the best outcome for each of your constituents, everybody wins.
Absolutely.
And they know you're a trusted resource because you work both sides.
Well, I'm always a double agent, but yes.
So now, can you share some of the examples that you've worked with some of the clients? Like specifically, like go through the process of what was their challenge and what was the solution you guys landed on?
Okay. Most recently, I don't know if it's too much of a challenge, but Jack Daniel's and the Jack Honey brand. So Jack Honey is indexing quite high with African-Americans.
And that's a new brand for them, relatively new?
It's relatively new, and I don't want to stretch the facts, but in terms of the whiskey brands, I believe from a new brand being introduced to the market, it's in the top five now in the U.S.
Wow.
So going from new, you consider all, you know, these are brands going back 150 years.
Right.
Here's a new product line that's, you know, jumped into the top five. So again, looking for Jack Honey and how it's indexing with African-Americans, where can we find that right demographic and find them in abundance? Well, this weekend will be the CIAA basketball tournament.
Okay.
That's the Division II CIAA Historically Black Colleges and Universities. It's in Charlotte. What a lot of folks don't know is in terms of basketball tournaments, the attendance for that event is only behind the Final Four and the ACC tournament. So they're outpacing Pac-10, Big 12, Big 10. So, okay, so we've got a large group there. So how can we go in and find the right events? Well, again, this is a big social event as well. Lots of parties, lots of events, lots of lifestyle activations. So all that marries very well with the Jack Daniel's brand, Jack Honey, work with the day parties, sponsorship, those kind of things. So we've gone in and partnered them with not only the day parties, but some night events, and really been able to leverage that, extend it out to retail, advertising. If you go down to the Epicenter, which is kind of the Atlanta equivalent of the Atlantic Station,
mm-hmm.
where they have right across the street from the basketball arena, a lot of nightlife, restaurants. So there's a elevator wrap, three stories high, Jack Daniel's, Jack Honey. That's how we're kind of leveraging the brand with a particular event. So,
because that, you can't do sampling with that, can you?
we could have done sampling this afternoon if we'd have put some thought into this whole episode.
Yes, that's my. I missed the opportunity there. But yeah, so you can't sample necessarily outside into the mm-hmm. general public.
But in a private event.
But in a private event, yes. And that's how we leverage that.
Mm-hmm. And then did you work with maybe the College Alumni Association's events that they're doing in conjunction?
Well, we're very mindful of that. You know, Jack Daniels, the Brown-Forman company, is very mindful of the responsibility messaging.
Right.
So we don't necessarily partner with the universities or alumni directly because we don't want to, you know, have a confusing message towards the college students. But we will partner with the appropriate events and parties
that they might be attending.
Exactly. That by default, they'll attend the adults that are.
And that's part of the value that your agency provides, right? Is to research that and to give them the options and what are the best places for them to display their message in their samples.
Absolutely. You know, Brown-Forman and Jack Daniels, they're in the business of making whiskey and premium spirits. They're not in the business of doing parties and events.
Right.
So you need an agency to kind of fill the gap that understands what their goals are, what their challenges are, and what the opportunities are with the events. And that's where we fill that gap and say, here's our recommendations. Here's what we feel, you know, might be the best way to leverage the brand and present the brand and promote the brand.
Now, is your work directly with Brown-Forman or is it through their ad agency that it works with Brown-Forman?
Or is it both? We currently work directly with the Brown-Forman company, mm-hmm. but we do, depending on the event and the scale of the event, may work with another agency, an ad agency, depending on what the event might be.
Right, because sometimes an agency, they may not have any expertise in this experiential side, right?
Correct. You know, you may have a media buying advertising agency, but there are certain agencies that are, you know, 360 and you know, do it all. But we focus on the experiential side of things.
And then you focus primarily with your client being the brand as opposed to the agency of the brand?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. We want to focus on the brand and, you know, we
build relationships with the brand and members of their team directly.
Correct.
Rather than through a middleman or someone else isn't typically white labeling your efforts.
No.
Their behalf.
Typically, right. That's not the way it works. And we represent the brand and we also, you know, kind of provide them a filter as well. So as, you know, folks come in and want to partner with the brand, they may approach us first.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned some of the events are minority-focused. Do you do work outside of the minority area?
We do quite a bit. So we do, you know, I guess the key phrases are the general market, but multicultural. We do all of it. So working with events like Music Midtown here mm-hmm. in Atlanta or any of the basketball events. We just got back from NBA All-Star Game. So we have another client.
Oh, just a few days.
Just a few days ago. So just a few days ago, we had a client with Acid Cigar mm-hmm. and doing some of their activations on site and around kind of a guerrilla grassroots effort.
So that's a more smaller scale. So you work in all different scales.
Correct. We work on all different scales and all different types of events. They're not all the events are not
three-story
concerts and exactly.
Right.
So some of it is, you know, working with Delta Airlines this past year. And some of their trade show activations.
Mm-hmm.
So
how would you attack like kind of more of the smaller guerrilla ambush marketing kind of strategies?
Believe it or not, it's not a lot of difference. You know, everything's kind of scale. Mm-hmm. When I was on the event management side, I would try to explain to folks, you know, doing the local 5K run walk is not much different than doing the Super Bowl. It's just the scale of it.
Right.
You know, you still have security and media and logistics and operations. It's just the scale is much larger with the Super Bowl. So same thing with our clients in doing marketing experiential activations. It may be grassroots based upon their budget and what we're trying to, you know, really, you know, kind of do a hit and run and get in and do some things. But the activation and the experience still need to have the same benefits.
Right. So the same logistics are involved pretty much. No matter if it's just the size of it.
Correct. Can't you just hear or see a young aspiring person who believes they want to get into this arena, just absolutely wide-eyed and salivating as they're listening to you talk about the environments that you get to operate in? And I know you and Lee touched on it early in the conversation, but I want to hear a little bit more about your backstory and the journey, because this was not overnight that you accumulated this knowledge base, this level of expertise, and that you get to do such marvelous, apparently very rewarding work. So can you talk a little bit about the journey?
Definitely. And I'll go back a little bit. I would never discourage somebody for following their dream, their goal. You know, I played football in college, and I kind of got started in sports and the sports marketing and sports administration. And I had an old boss, Khalil Johnson, at the Georgia Dome. He came to speak at our class at Georgia State, and he says, you know, how many of you folks are really passionate about sports and love sports? And everybody throws their hands up. He says, if you like sports, buy a ticket. And what that meant was, you know, this is still work. I cannot complain about going to Music Midtown and to the NBA All-Star Game.
It's hard to get sympathy from your friends, right?
Yeah, people don't understand it. But it doesn't mean that I'm sitting front row watching the game. I've been to the Super Bowl and have not watched a play.
Right.
Because my back was turned taking care of either a client or making sure there'd be no signage was up or whatever operational aspect needed, you know, the BCS National Championship game. You know, we managed that game from everything from the transportation to security to credentialing. This is going after 9/11. So, you know, working with the FBI, there's a lot
that
of elements.
Glamorous stuff there,
that
right?
Glamorous stuff. You know, picking up boxes at 6 a.m. is good stuff.
But you were there.
But I was there, and honestly, it was a lot of fun. So I would never discourage somebody from that. But get in wherever you can.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the 5K road race, volunteer, figure it out, learn it. Because again, that is the same as a Super Bowl.
Right.
You know, and if you understand the operational side of it, the marketing side of it, sponsorship sales, you can apply that to the next event, the next larger event. You know, I kind of grew within the system. I worked in ticket sales. You know, this is pre-internet when the Hawks, and we dialed out of the phone book. Literally,
right.
I got A through L.
Dialing for dollars.
Dialing for dollars. So, you know, you learn these things and you apply it and you move up. And I went from the Hawks to the, you know, the Falcons and the Georgia Dome and to the Peach Bowl. And a lot of folks say, well, either you can't keep a job or I got a lot of experience. I haven't figured that out yet. But, you know, I felt like I moved up each time.
Mm-hmm.
So the Atlanta Sports Council, going down to Miami, and then along the way, I matured and I figured out, okay, I'm chasing a position, chasing dollars, but what do I really like to do? And I like these events, but I want to do it for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to understand it. And I've got a good base knowledge now, like you mentioned, Stone. And I've, you know, how do I apply it? And how can I make my own decisions and, you know, kind of have my own control of my own destiny? So that's kind of come full circle and it's been great.
And then now with LNL kind of had that same path as well, right? Can you share a little bit about LNL's history?
Yes. LNL started 10 years ago and my business partner started the company out in LA. And his first client was the Coca-Cola company.
Mm-hmm.
It was a $300 contract. So,
doing some big Super Bowl thing.
right. But, you know, but we appreciated the opportunity. He appreciated, you know, he took care of it like it was $300,000.
Right.
And that grew. And, you know, I joined the company. Actually, I was with another agency. And I was subbing him out to do some work for us.
Right.
Got to know him, what his work ethic was, and you know his business habits, and said, hey, you know what? We might have an opportunity to partner here. I'm looking to go back out on my own. So we combined forces in 2014. At the time, we were probably doing about, you know, $2 million in revenue that year. And each year, we've grown. We've grown, you know, 20%, 30%. In 2015 and 2016, we've grown another 30%.
It's all that dialing for dollars practice still comes in handy.
Hey,
huh?
You're going to hear no. I just need that one yes.
So, just closer to the yes.
Exactly. You know, and a lot of folks ask me, well, you know, why do you do it? It's difficult. You know, I say, you're going to hear no, you know, but it's that one yes. It's fulfilling. It's enjoyable. And again, it's hard to complain about, you know, I got to leave here and go to
the NBA All-Star game.
Right. The Democratic National Committee's in town.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing a party for them. It's not too bad.
Not too bad. So now, what's next for you? What do you guys need and how can we help?
I mean, this really is a great opportunity, a chance to, you know, be on air, and I appreciate you guys having us here just to kind of tell our story. And, you know, I don't suspect that there's, you know, 15 brands out there going, hey, you know what, I'm going to call that guy.
But just all he needs is one. Right?
All I need is that one. There's somebody there that's outside that brand meeting and they're listening to us now.
And what you're offering, you're not saying, look, I only work with companies that have $10 million budgets. You're willing to work with people that have budgets of all sizes, right?
Absolutely. And we're growing, you know, we're starting actually another arm of the company where, you know, we've got great assets. Mm-hmm. We could produce a concert. We've got all the speaker and the lighting.
So you can create events?
We can create events.
Really?
And so that's where we're now, you know, kind of branching off another arm.
Is it always business to consumer, or do you do business to business as well?
It's primarily business to business now. And now it'll maybe shift a little bit towards business to consumer because we have assets like a photo booth.
Uh-huh.
Well, I use it with my corporate clients and all their events, but there may be a wedding or anything like that. And so rather than sit in the warehouse,
right?
How do
make
I leverage
some money
it?
On the weekend?
There
right?
we go. Make money when you sleep.
That's
you
right.
You got to figure out that.
Now, you mentioned trade shows. Can you talk about how you work? Do you help them develop their booth, or do you actually work with the conference that's putting on the trade show and work with the whole overarching show?
Sure. So with Delta Airlines, what we did was they had a series of trade shows under talent acquisition. Where they're going out to different
like colleges, recruiting,
different events. This next month, the first weekend, we're going to do Women in Aviation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different trade shows that they'll may go out and they may want to present, maybe a 20 by 30 or 30 by 30 booth. So what we did was said, look, we can find a better, you know, cost savings in terms of presenting your booth because we own the assets.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do similar trade shows and events for Coca-Cola and for Jack Daniels, we can leverage some of the assets, bring your costs down, and still and give you a better presentation.
Right.
So, you know, we had that conversation probably for over a year. Then we got
that's another misconception in business, right? That these deals happen like overnight.
No, overnight is 2 years.
Right, exactly.
That is overnight.
Patience is part of the process.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, we've proven ourselves in some other areas, and so we were given the opportunity, and we did, in fact, lower the cost, and, you know, we were able to show that, hey, we can give you a great platform. We can, you know, present your brand. We understand the value of your brand
mm-hmm.
and how to present your brand, you know. You can see our case history, our record, and we'd like to do that for you. So, and it worked out very well. So with the trade shows, what we do is you want to create an open format. They are there for business. This is truly, you know, B2B, where they're trying to engage somebody and have a conversation. You have to be mindful of that. They need privacy, but openness. It needs to be exciting and inviting, but being able to conduct, you know, business. You have to deal on the back end. The operations are a little bit more technical,
mm-hmm.
dealing with union buildings, non-union buildings,
right.
Weights.
Yeah, that's a whole other
shipping.
Ball game.
Yes, right. Yeah. So
it's good to deal with an agency that knows how to navigate that world.
Absolutely.
Because that is not for everybody.
Not for everybody, no.
So you're looking for more trade show work? You're looking for more brand work or all of the above?
All of the above. I think this year for 2017, it is a focus of ours to look for more trade show work.
Mm-hmm.
The trade shows, unlike the basketball game or the concert.
They're happening every week somewhere.
Every week
right?
somewhere, and they're 3 and 4 day events.
Right.
So, you know, it's not easy, not hard to do the math on that. So
a lot of opportunities.
A lot of opportunities. And there's a lot of opportunities for, you know, the brands that are not consumer brands, mm-hmm. you know. It may be, you know, a trucking company or
right.
a,
not that the most sexy or glamorous, but they still do
they
the
still
work.
Do,
right, they still do the
they
work.
They pay their bills too. So
exactly. So now, if somebody wanted to learn more, is there a website? What's the best way to get?
Sure.
A hold
the,
of you?
The best way to get a hold of us is to check out our website. That's LNLAgency.com. That's LN as in Nancy, LAgency.com. And they can see, you know, we've got a great photo gallery on there. You got to get a sense of what we do and our activations. And our team, we have a team based here in Atlanta, as well as Los Angeles. And we warehouse and have contractors in between. So we are nationwide. Last year, we did events in over 19 states for 4 different brands. And we're very happy and excited about it.
Well, you had me at Jack Daniels. But then through the course of the conversation, I discovered, I mean, you actually have a great deal of depth and substance. Our next guest wrote a book. Is there a book in you? Do you have any aspirations for writing a book?
You know, I can't say that I had any aspirations, but I do enjoy when people tell their story and you can kind of learn from them. I'm a fan of the biographies, you know.
Right.
Like to hear about people's history and how they come about, you know, passing along their knowledge and,
right.
and their experience. So, yes.
All right. So maybe we get him back in here and we record a book, right?
There you go.
I'm up for it.
And then
Let's
we give it to Jess. She prints it. It's out Tuesday,
bam.
Right?
Right.
You guys do a trade show?
Exactly.
Knock it out.
There you go.
Overnight, right?
That's it. A year later, we'll have this thing happening.
Russell, this has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for joining us. And let's make sure to thank Jess for putting all this together. This has been very informative and invigorating. We really appreciate it, man. Oh,
thank you. I appreciate High Velocity Radio for having me on. Thank you very much.
Hey, can you hang with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. I'm excited.
All right. Me too. Lee, you ready for the headliner?
I am.
The gentleman's been very patient.
Well, the pressure's on him.
That's a hard act to follow, right? I thought I saw him taking some notes. I know I saw him nodding his head quite a bit. Please join me in welcoming to the show, President with the Wren Wealth Management Group, also author of Finding Your Money's Greater Purpose, Mr. Patrick Wren. Hey, man, what'd you learn in that last segment?
Oh, I learned that Jack Daniels has a new brand.
It's new to you.
Fantastic.
So, Patrick, can you share a little bit about your work? How are you helping folks?
Basically, my work is with individuals and with charities, and this came about, I've been a financial advisor for 40 years, and back in 2000, as a business owner, I sat down, when the calendar turns from December to January, it's a good time to sort of assess what's going on, mm-hmm. see where your business is coming from, what improvements you can make, what expenses you can cut out. And having done that, I was trying to find a common denominator among my clients. And what I discovered was we were at a stage of life where many of them were in what is now called going from success to significance. Mm-hmm. All of them I had met or had worked with as a result of doing work with charities. I think it's a bad idea to get on a charitable board to look for business. So that was never my intention. But typically, being involved with charities, people that you work with would ask you what you do for a living. And that would lead to business. So it was very backdoor. And I thought there might be an opportunity here. And so I did a little due diligence. And what I discovered is that charities have been struggling for years. Now, I'm not talking about the major charities in the country, like the Ivy League schools or the Community Foundation of New York or any of that sort of thing. But many charities have been struggling financially.
Right.
They needed to put some money in the bank, so to speak. They needed to grow their endowment. Right.
Wasn't there a lot of consolidation?
There's been consolidation. There's also been, if you look at the statistics, more charities have incorporated than new businesses over the last half dozen years or so. In Atlanta, for example, we have four charities that are involved with rescue animals. Now, whether or not you need four is not for me to say, but there are four. And they're vying for your attention. They're vying for your money. It seemed to me that there was an opportunity here. And also the people that raise money for charities that are staff people, there's a fair amount of turnover in that business. As a matter of fact, the average person that is in the development area of a charity lasts about 18 months. And there are various reasons for this. It's hard work. It's hard work knocking on doors. You have changes in administration. You have changes in the board, and they're all very demanding, and they're very focused on current dollars. Mm-hmm. This, to me, spelled opportunity. I started working with some of my clients that were on the board and chairs of charities. I had done this myself, and I offered myself as someone who could help them grow their charitable base, their donor base. And working with donors in the financial arena, I've been able to show them ways that they might be able to increase their charitable contributions, their charitable intent, and still not sacrifice for themselves or their family what might be food on the table, so to speak. So that led me to writing the book. The title of it is Finding Your Money's Greater Purpose, and it is very autobiographical. It's a lot of my experience with mm-hmm. people and with charities.
Now, do you find that that's that as people kind of age, that their priorities shift from just accumulating wealth to leaving a legacy?
There's no doubt about that. Now, we all have, I think, at that stage of life, a couple of priorities. One is we want to be sure we don't run out of money.
Right.
That is the number one.
Is that fear of most people?
That is the major fear. The AARP actually has said that it's a greater fear than the fear of death.
Running out of money.
I'd rather die than run out of money.
Wow. Well, death will take care of it. Okay? Death is a solution. So it is the major motivator. And if you can show people how they can participate without running out of money, then I think you've it's a win-win-win. So yes, to answer your question, I found that when people get to that stage of life, they start thinking about, first of all, do I have enough?
Right.
Will it remain enough? And then if you have children and grandchildren, what's the proper legacy for them?
Right.
It may not all be financial.
Right.
Okay. But if it is financial, what is the proper amount? When should they receive it? You know, if you have two children, you can give one money and it'd be the best thing you ever did for them, and you can give the other one money and it'd be the worst thing you ever did
right.
for them. So it's a complicated conversation that, you know, we get involved with our clients.
And now, is that something that is just part of the service you offer when you're dealing with clients, is to kind of give them the 40,000 foot view and maybe share some best practices and some good, bad, the ugly stories that you've run across?
Yeah, I've got plenty of stories, 40 years. You know, my father is one of the stories. So I share that, and I share it in the book. Very intelligent guy, just didn't seek the correct advice for some things in his...
He thought he could go at it alone?
Yes, he did go at it alone. So I think that was an era when he was a self-made man. So
how hard could this be, right?
Yeah. So what do I need advice for? So after he died, I was in a position to help my mother not make the same mistake.
Right.
So I've talked about that in the book. But yes, number one, the 40,000 foot level, here's how much you have, here's how long it'll last based on your current lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then if there is surplus, or if there isn't surplus, sometimes we may be able to create surplus through tax savings and other mechanisms that we can use in our financial planning work.
All right. So just to do a little level setting here, I'm operating under the impression, and I hope you validate this assumption, but I get the sense that you don't have to have Lee Cantor depth pockets to pull this off. You can just be a normal person who's made a decent living if you manage things right and still enjoy the fun and just the of being able to contribute. Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Two points on that. One is I have a colleague up in the Northeast who works for a historical organization where they are looking to take in historic property.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he says his favorite prospect for charitable giving for his organization is a single older woman with a house and an IRA. And I won't go into a lot of detail, but you can donate the house while you're alive and still remain in it. That gives you a tax deduction that's large enough so that you can take more money out of the IRA and not pay tax. So that's a very, typically a very modest individual financially. But yeah, they can certainly benefit. The other is, I would tell you that, as I mentioned earlier, it's not just money. A lot of people that reach retirement have enough to live on, have time on their hands, and they have expertise, and they have desire, and they like to be around people. And I would tell you, we encourage those folks to get involved. Maybe they can't contribute to the extent they have before, but they can contribute time and they can contribute intelligence.
Now, when you're working with the client and having this kind of level of a conversation, I would imagine at this stage, and maybe this is just the nature of your business and your practice, that you've developed this kind of trust and this trusted advisor kind of seat at their table. Can you talk a little bit about how that evolves?
Yeah, I remember years ago, a friend of mine, we were at a conference, and he stood up and he said, the secret to marketing in this business, in my view, is find people that think the way you do, do business with them, and eliminate everybody else. And so, yeah, either that happens or it doesn't, and we work with the people that where it happens, but... that's a big part of this, is to gain their trust, because mm-hmm. you're talking about their pocketbook. That usually leads to sharing all kinds of personal issues.
And I would think in your world, the person already has somebody.
Many times they do. And for various reasons, they want to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
Either it's an expertise issue. The statistics show that... widows, typically, 80% of widows change their financial advisor.
Really?
Huh. New widows. And I won't go into a whole lot of preaching here about this, but primarily that's due to the fact they haven't been involved until then.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't know who that person is. They've either been discounted, have not been educated, the advisor hasn't reached out to them. That's an opportunity. For people like us, we get referrals from estate attorneys and CPAs where there are widows that
need help,
don't know what to do.
Right. Now, when you're working on this legacy component of a person's kind of life cycle, how do you kind of understand what's the important charities? Like, how do you, like, do you have annual meetings? Like, how do you know, or when's it time to implement the legacy component? Like, does that happen? Oh, right. When you retire, now we work into this. Like, I don't understand exactly
how
it's implemented and how you're even having the conversation.
Typically, they've been involved prior to retirement,
mm-hmm.
Church, school.
So they already have some interests.
They do. They've been involved somehow.
In something.
Right. And they just haven't been shown how to maximize that financially.
So they're,
they could probably do more.
So they've been just maybe volunteering, or maybe they've been donating a few dollars or some amount of money to a cause.
Right.
And then you kind of educate them, well, you know, you're already doing this, so.
So the magic words for me are, when we talk about this area, and I say, well, I notice you're involved with your school or your church. Tell me a little bit about that, and they'll tell me. And the magic words for me are when they say, I just wish I could do more.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they say that, then we can get involved. If they say, begrudgingly, that's something my wife's involved in,
right.
or, you know, my dad was involved with
so
that.
So I gotta do it, right?
Yeah.
You know, the passion.
We're not gonna be all that successful.
Right.
Yeah.
But if it's something that they're passionate about, they have more time and maybe resources available, you can really help them maximize that. Time and resource.
And, you know, it's also a great opportunity to involve the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this goes back to many, many years ago. I was involved with the Georgia Special Olympics. I have two boys, and I got them involved. There's a spring game, and there's a winter game. In those days, it was in Athens and down in Warner Robins. Mm-hmm. And I would take one of the children. We'd go volunteer for the weekend, stay there.
Right.
And I thought it was a great life lesson. It was a great time to be together. And that had nothing to do with money.
Sure.
But you can do the same thing with money. You can set up a family foundation. You can get the children involved. You can show them what it means to give. They can be taught how to manage the money, how to oversee the money. So charity offers a lot of benefits.
Now, you mentioned a family foundation. Is there a certain kind of amount of net worth you have to have to start that?
For a foundation, you do. You can certainly get involved in what's called a donor-advised fund, which many of the financial institutions have. The Community Foundation here in Atlanta has. Many charities have, for as little as
$5,000. $5,000 one time or annually?
One time.
And then now that allows you to...
allows you to use that as a charitable pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a tax deduction. You put in $5,000 today, and you get a tax deduction today. you might not decide to distribute any of the money for a year or two. You look around for something worthwhile. It's a great way for the children to come in. We recommend a Thanksgiving. Children come with an idea, and then the family votes, okay, we're going to give our money this year to X, and it might just be $200. You know, it doesn't have to be a lot. And then next year, you come back and tell us what they did with the money and who we should give it to this year. It's a great opportunity to educate in an area that, you know, they might want to contribute to and feel good about.
And then you're just building it into kind of the family culture that giving is just part of what we do.
Exactly.
Right? It's not just an add-on. This is part of what we do
every
year.
Who we are.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
I was thinking while you guys were talking, what a phenomenal diplomat, therapist, consultant you must be, because don't you have to work with husbands and wives? You yeah. must be really good at a tremendous facilitator.
Yeah, and now children. You know, we work in our client base. We work with half of the next generation, and now we're getting into the third. Believe it or not, because
they're
grandchildren.
That's a lot of moving parts and emotions and personalities.
But it's very satisfying work. You know, it's very satisfying work. I mean, you become an important person in their life.
I'll bet you.
And I'm sure you've seen a lot of impact of your work where they made a difference in other people's lives.
Well, you know, I've been fortunate to actually see that, because I can actually point to numbers where there are three endowments, for example, that I've been involved with that come to mind, that we've increased five in three different cases, one 5 times, one 10 times, and one 20 times.
Wow.
Now, that took 15 years.
Sure.
I don't want you to think that, you know, but that's my legacy.
Right. Now, can you talk about the book? Now, when you were writing the book, was that a difficult process? And would you recommend business people write books?
I think writing a book is one of the best sort of business cards you can have.
Mm-hmm.
It elevates you. First of all, you took the effort to do it.
Sure.
And then it showcases your expertise. You can look in there and say, oh, okay, this is what makes him different from everybody else.
Right.
So I would say yes. I think it's a good way to go. It does take some effort.
Sure.
I wrote a chapter a month. So it took me 8 months. And then I had to find a way to get it published and all of that good stuff. But it's very helpful, and I use book signings as a way for the charities to bring in their donors.
Mm-hmm.
I do a little talk about the book, talk about everybody gets a book, I sign, and it helps them get their mental act together in terms of this whole
because
area.
They may not kind of connect the dots themselves about charity, their wealth, and,
exactly.
and how to kind of leverage it for exactly. the good of the community, the good of their family.
The paradigm shift is that all charities are calling on people saying, we have a need, we want you to help us with our need.
Right.
If we can turn that around to where they come in and visit about the donor's need and how some of these techniques, some gift planning techniques, can help solve or at least help with the donor's issues and problems, then that changes the whole paradigm.
Right, because a lot of times the charity is focused on the end kind of their audience.
Right.
And the donors are just a means to that end.
Right.
And if they'd focus more on the donors, they can help more people.
Right. And the donors, that's absolutely right. You've nailed it.
Right. So, but that's not obvious.
It's not obvious. And that's why people are resistant.
Right.
And that's why you have to change the messaging to say, what's in it for you versus what's in it for us.
And it's not a bad thing that it's something's in it for the donor, because ultimately it's going to help the audience and who the charity wants to serve ultimately, right?
Well, you know, the tax laws exist to encourage this. And the reason they do is because, by and large, charities can be much more efficient in the delivery of goods than government can. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'd eliminate the charitable deduction and government would do it all.
Right.
But charities typically have been more successful.
All right. Where can our listeners go to learn more, maybe have a more substantive conversation with you or someone on your team? And where can they go to get their hands on this book?
Sure. Patrick Wren, R-E-N-N, patrickwren.com. You'll get a link to the book. There's an assessment on there if you're a donor. There's an assessment for individuals. There's an assessment for charities. And take the assessment. I'll be in touch if you want me to.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, man. I learned a lot.
Thank you.
One of the pearls for me is this, and I'm going to want to learn more about it, you know, post-show or when we're off air, this donor advised fund. Again, you don't have to be Midas over here, Lee Cantor, to get involved in something like that. And just the pure joy that can bring you and your family. So,
absolutely.
So thank you. This has been great.
You bet.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this afternoon. And everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.